evening. Mr. King, would you like to preserve any time for your...
I would like to try and reserve 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
I hope my voice will hold that long. I apologize, it's going to be very unpleasant to listen to me.
Sound like Barry White. So.
Yeah.
As long as you don't break out into song.
Yes. So, good morning, Mayor. Please, the court. In this criminal case, I'm asking the court, of course, to find that the trial court erred as a matter of law, but also in light of the absence of sufficient evidence, not only to reverse, but to reverse and dismiss. The alternative, of course, to reverse and remand. I'd like to spend the first part of my time perhaps reciting what I think are the undisputed facts in this case. Although I'm not sure that they're dispositive. There was no aerial view of the scene, and it's a bit confusing with the exhibits. So on the alleged defense date in this case, the complaining witness, Federal Ranger Jackson, was on duty driving down Forest Road 1279, which is also known as Hogpen Road apparently, on duty, and he looks to his left into a clearing through the trees in the National Forest. And the easiest way to do this is maybe simply to turn to the exhibits. He's driving along the road, 1279, through the past defense exhibits 2 and 3 on his left, trees and red signs, and the other items that are referred to in the transcript.
Let me, and I think I can vouch for both Judge Malvo and Judge Chapin and me that we kind of looked at all of this and evaluated it, so we have a pretty good feel for the circumstances that were presented. And so if we could, I'd like to focus on what I think, and I can't speak for my two colleagues, is the double I definition of a highway. And a highway is defined as the entire width between the boundary lines of every way or place used for purposes of vehicular travel or any property owned, leased, or controlled by the United States government and located in the Commonwealth. And I think there's a concession that there was vehicular traffic on this road, or do you not concede that?
Well, I have more issue with the road, because it is clear that there is a road number 1279. It's got a name and a number, identification, gravel bed, and so on. And then as one turns left into this clearing, there is this short section of fresh gravels. It's an access area. And that is bounded by an imaginary line that one draws across that gravel at the Masonite or Carsonite, whatever it is, post. It was referenced extensively in the exhibits in the trial. And I think the facts are undisputed that Officer Jackson pulls in, he pulls past that post into the clearing and encounters the defendant, Roman Bledsoe, behind the wheel of the Jeep Cherokee, traveling in the opposite direction out of the clearing. They are still in the clearing. And I think it's my fault, trial counsel's fault, I don't know. I think both attorneys may have been a little sloppy in the terminology and talked about road and gravel areas. But we did not and do not concede that the location at issue is a road or that it is on either of those two described places.
Was the place where your client was operating the vehicle a place that vehicular traffic used?
Yes, I think that was undisputed as well.
Okay, and so if that's indeed the case, I think everybody concedes that this was United States government land.
Yes.
Okay. So if that's the case, that it was indeed a place or a right-of-way or whatever you want to call it used for vehicular traffic, and it was on federal land, why doesn't it fit the definition of double I?
I think particularly under the analysis that the Supreme Court has given us in Kim, I think Kim affirms that you have to read both one, little I and little two I, together with the general definition. Mm-hmm. And although the subsections, each of them do, of course, alter the starting definition.
They define it more to try to help us figure it out.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It's actually, I think, an interesting statute interpretation question, but we can't read the second subsection on its own terms all by itself, I think is the short answer. If I may, to follow up on that.
Yes, sir.
I think what Kim did is explain that the owner or manager of the property, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
But Kim is slightly different because it deals with an apartment complex.
Yes.
We're dealing with a different part of the statute, arguably, in reference to being on federal lands. And that talks about an area that's accessible to vehicular traffic that's bounded.
Yes.
Isn't that different from the analysis in Kim? And factually different from Kim?
It is different. I think the statute still requires that the way or place be, could be, among other things, a road. It's interesting, for example, that small 2i does not include the word road, but obviously it's not a non-issue. Like, the road is a way or a place, as other ways or places are.
But we would have to assume the General Assembly meant the words in the statute as they've used them. And
yes.
If, in fact, that's not used as a road, I mean, what are we to draw from that?
Is it one that arguably one could exclude roads, but I think that would be nonsensical. I think my point is that there is a certain amount of ambiguity that has to be resolved in favor of the defendant in this case. One of the cases that was cited as a reason for the amendment of the statute is these situations where people are on federal land. One case is the Great Dismal Swamp. It's on a road. And because that road was closed, at least temporarily, the charge was reversed and dismissed.
It seems, though, and I think we'd all agree that the General Assembly has become more and more conservative, for lack of a better way of putting it, in defining circumstances where a person could be subject to DWI. I think I read in Virginia Lawyers Weekly just yesterday that you can now get a DWI on your own land. That's new and different. That's something that came out just yesterday that passed either the Senate or the House, that they were looking to extend the prerogatives of law enforcement to deal with people believed to be DWI. And so if that is indeed the case and that there's a more conservative or more progressive approach to dealing with DWIs, why can't we assume that the legislature, bless you, meant what it said when it defined ways of passage to include places like your client was driving?
Well, as the Supreme Court, I think says in Kim, which of course is a civil case, but also deals squarely with this issue, this definition of what is it is on a highway for the purposes of law enforcement. They looked at the parking lot, which is of course a way, and said, no, it doesn't matter whether it's a privately owned parking lot. I would argue it doesn't matter whether it's a designated road in a development where local law enforcement is invited or negotiated with the developer, landowner, to provide meaningful public access to motor vehicles. It doesn't matter if it is a federally owned, managed piece of land where the public has entrusted the agency to regulate it. None of that matters. What matters is if the location at issue has the purpose of motor vehicle traffic. It seems intuitively a little backwards. We'd be arguing, as I am, that Mr. Bledsoe was probably violating another law by driving in the campsite clearing. But because that's not before this court, I think that's the argument, and I think it's correct. If he's in there four-wheeling because he knows he's a habitual offender, and he knows he's not supposed to be on the road, that's not a defense, right? But it doesn't need to be, because the clearing, although people have in fact used it for four-wheeling, they're probably all breaking the law.
So your point would be that he might be guilty of something, but he's not guilty of this.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. I think there was this sort of red herring about where the gravel ended and where it stopped and whether there had been gravel. I think the gravel helped the Commonwealth at trial because the evidence was there's gravel basically everywhere. But then none of that mattered because the Commonwealth's argument was, it doesn't matter anyway. This is all federal land. The whole park is a highway. And my position, I think my argument today is that under Kim, we have a simple way to resolve the different subparts in connection with the main definition. Along common sense lines and say, look, no, it's not about who owns it, it's about what this place is. It is incumbent on the Commonwealth to prove the boundaries of their highway.
Counsel, is any of that a factual determination to be made in terms of looking at the photographs and determining what are the boundary lines?
Well, I'm not sure my colleague will argue that I waived the argument. They did in their brief. The point is, they don't have to be painted, that's the state of the law.
And I'm not saying they have to be painted, I'm asking a different question. To what degree do we owe any deference to the fact finder as to the finding of what a boundary line is? Not the interpretation of the statute, but the factual determination.
Well, I don't think there was any finding made about that.
Well, would there implicitly be one by the jury?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I'll go ahead and end at this point. What time I have left? Thank you.
you think this case is controlled by the specific language of lowercase double I?
I think absolutely so, Your Honor.
Your opponent colleague would suggest that this particular definition does not meet the conduct of his client because he wasn't actually on the, quote, passageway, he was in the forest. What would be your response to that?
Your Honor, I think that these arguments were presented to the fact finder and that the fact finder resolved them against him based on the facts before it. The statutory question is whether this was on federal land, and we all agree that it is, and whether it was between boundary lines, which I think was waived at trial, but even if it wasn't, it's meritless to challenge boundary lines. I think that was a factual determination that was implicit in the jury's finding and that there was evidence to support it. And then the third point is whether this was an area used for vehicular travel. And Your Honor, Mr. Bledsoe's argument appears to be that you don't just use sub double I, but you also have to read the general definition that precedes it. But I think that that's not the right way to read the statute. Again, when you look at the plain terms of the statute, that you have the general definition that was at issue in Kim, and then there's a set off that says, and for law enforcement purposes, and then sub I and sub double I. And those are alternative definitions that can be used when you're in a law enforcement context, because the definitional statute isn't in the criminal law, it's in the highway code. But it's incorporated by reference into a lot of criminal laws as it was convenient. So for law enforcement purposes, when you're on federal land, sub 2 is the correct definition to bring in. And on the plain terms of the statute, the area that Mr. Bledsoe was driving was a highway. So that's the Commonwealth's position. And they're just, to boil it down, I guess, there's no error in construing highway as lacking that open to the use of the public language that's in the general definition when you're on federal land, because sub 2 is a self-contained alternative definition. It's not like additional elements that also have to be proven. And there's really not a sensible way to read them together as being both applicable in the same facts. There's no need to resort to statutory interpretation canons in this, because I think the language of the statute itself is unambiguous. But Umbrief, we did go down through the legislative history of how we got the federal land definition, alternate definition, and what it immediately preceded it with federal courts finding that that highways on federal enclaves were not highways because of this sort of heightened idea of what was open to the, what was or wasn't open to
the federal enclave by its very nature is restricted access.
Yes, yes. So that 2006 amendment, though, it solved the problem that was highlighted by the Fourth Circuit opinions in Adams and Smith, and it really foreclosed Bledsoe's present argument. If we were arguing this in 2005 before sub double I or sub 2 existed, then his argument would go up a lot stronger, because we would have to have proven that there was, you know, that area was open to the use of the public. And I think that his arguments at trial about whether the Code of Federal Regulations allowed or didn't allow, and whether the no trespassing signs that were posted in the vicinity barred that, I think those would have been a lot better taken in the pre-2006 statutory landscape. But as we find it now, after that amendment, I just don't think that there's any way to get that argument off the ground, frankly. And again, I will make the point, I do believe that Bledsoe's boundary lines argument that he tries to raise here is barred by his representations to the trial court. He told the trial court that he wasn't arguing boundary lines, that he wasn't making issue of that, and the trial court didn't go deeper into that. That wasn't made a bigger issue than to presumably put in the jury instructions.
But arguably, was he indicating he wasn't making that argument terms of the requirement of actually having lane markings, having like painted lines.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think implicit in his representation of the trial court was that he wasn't arguing that at all, that the boundary lines, he wasn't even going to try to make an argument on that. And so that's either an aggravate-reprobate problem or at the very minimum a 5A18 problem, because it's just not an argument that the trial court can consider. In the contemporaneous objection rule would have required him to have raised that argument and certainly not to have disclaimed it. It's in somewhat ambiguous terms that he disclaimed it. So it's one of those two, I think. But even if it wasn't, there was sufficient evidence from which a fact finder could find boundary lines. We heard a lot of testimony about how there was an area that was graveled, and then beyond that, there wasn't. And we have the pictures in the record, and I will say that I printed this out in black and white, and it's a little more ambiguous in black and white, but whenever you look at the original pictures in color, it's a lot clearer and a lot more stark where the gravel ends and where the sort of forest clearing begins. We also had testimony from Ranger Jackson, or from Officer Jackson, about the reason why that area was graveled. It was graveled to give people vehicular access to the campsite. And so when you take that into the totality of the evidence that was before the fact finder, it certainly wasn't outside of what a reasonable fact finder could conclude based on the evidence before it to find that this was an area that was used for vehicular travel, and even that it was intended for that by the Park Service. And that testimony from Jackson was at 63 and 64. And again, Bledsoe's own expert and investigator, Dean, he admitted that the area was graveled and that it looked to have been fairly regularly driven on. That was the language he used. That's at 156 and 157. And I know that it's been conceded that this was an area that was used for regular travel. And McConnell's position is that under the correct statutory interpretation, that ends the inquiry. But even if there was an openness requirement, this evidence is very probative to say that it was met by the evidence before the fact finder. The Kim analysis was under the general highway definition. They never even got into the subparts that are for law enforcement purposes within the ambit of the definitional statute 462-100. It was certainly not construing, it doesn't stand for the proposition that when you get into the law enforcement definitions that you also have to consider the general definition that's used for highway everywhere else in the code. There's just no support for that. And confined itself to the general statutory definition that we've been talking about for 50 plus years, that has been tinkered around the edges out, but has always had that openness requirement. And again, I just repeat that subsection 2 or subsection double I is a self-contained alternate definition. It's not to be read in addition to the general definition's language. The point was raised repeatedly at trial and also an argument that the Commonwealth's position would render the whole national park or the whole national forest would be a highway under the Commonwealth's definition. And I'm not sure if that might have snuck out of the Commonwealth's attorney's mouth during argument or not, but it's certainly not an argument that stands up because...
Snuck out, didn't know it was coming out of his mouth and just kind of got out there.
Yeah, sure. I say that to say I haven't reviewed the record to see if that was something they actually argued or not, but to the extent that someone could argue that, it would be flawed if they couldn't meet the definitional requirements in sub 2, which include boundary lines and actual use for vehicular travel. So the suggestion that affirming here is going to open up to the parade of horribles for anyone driving anywhere on any federal land is suddenly going to be open to habitual offender liability. I think that may be ill-founded. And again, I would just repeat that the jury did implicitly find that there were boundary lines, that was implicit in its finding because it had the elements that come before it, and that was, or the elements of the highway definition for it, and that was one of the elements, and it convicted. So if the court has any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but beyond that, I'd just ask to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. King, you have some rebuttal time if you'd like to use it.
Thanks, Dad.
You have five minutes and 10 seconds.
Yes, I'm ready to go. Where your honor has left off when I was here before. Do we give any deference to the jury's finding? And my answer is no, not just because I don't want to give deference to the jury's finding.
That might be a good reason too, though.
I think that it was the legal issue is that it should never have gone to the jury because this is a criminal case, and the Commonwealth simply didn't provide any evidence of the boundary to its highway. And no, I did not waive that argument, and I think I said so in my reply brief. It would be in the it's in my second motion for strikes, the appendix 104 through 106. I felt at the time as trial counsel, and I feel now, that there's this sort of burden shifting going on where because I can't point to a boundary and say my client was across that boundary, I win, I'm at a disadvantage. My colleague was just arguing to your honors, there's no dispute, about the fact of recently placed gravel on the location where my client was found, and there's absolutely a dispute about that. And even resolving the trial court's findings in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, that is not an inference that supports them. Because there was the road, 1279, it's got a name and a number, roadbed. There's the access portion, which was recently graveled, and which, according to both witnesses, and Officer Jackson, I think, also is a defense witness, although I may be mistaken about that. There's the post, which is the entrance to the defined clearing. The gravel stops at that post. It was also very clear that my client was operating a motor vehicle heading out of the clearing, not yet at that post, still in the clearing. There are a number of different ways and different facts on which my client could reasonably have been convicted, and these just aren't those facts. So I think it was incumbent on the Commonwealth to explain where the road ends and where the campsite begins, or if their position is the road includes the campsite, they could say that and identify them. And they didn't. We've got a clearing in the middle of the National Forest, and that's where my client was found. And that's not the purpose of the place. I think the court can take judicial notice, if it wishes to, of the Code of Federal Regulations. I think the key to this case has been, unfortunately perhaps, the motor vehicle use map, which is in Appendix 258 and 259. It's very tiny print, and it's federal. I'm not sure whether the jury looked at it or not, if it would have mattered. I hope your honors have a look. Because the signage that I mentioned when I first stood up here today, the red signs, and the motor vehicle use map are very clear that motor vehicle use is permitted in the park only in accordance with the map, which depicts all places where that is permitted and does not include campsites or clearings that includes Road 1279, which arguably includes the recently graveled shoulder and is not where my client was found driving. He was in the clearing. I don't have them here. If your honors want to research them, they're cited in the motor vehicle use maps, 36 CFR 212.51 and 36 CFR 261.13. And I, of course, respectfully disagree with my colleague that Kim simply doesn't apply. I think if it does, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. King. I don't think we have any questions. Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.
Thank you.